All across America and around the world, this is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
And now, your host for today's program, Dale Thronberry.
And welcome to Veterans Radio. My name is Dale Thronberry. I was CW-2 helicopter pilot in Vietnam, the United States Army. Welcome to Veterans Radio. I'm really excited to have you here today. We've got two great stories that we're going to be talking about. Number one is Operation Song. Those of you that have been listening to Veterans Radio over the years know that we bring on Operation Song veterans and songwriters usually about once a month to talk about their songs and to play them for you. What Operation Song does is that they, as I mentioned, they combine a veteran with a songwriter. They get together and in one day they write a song, and normally they record it right away, and they're just great. They're really beautiful songs. They're heart-wrenching sometimes. Sometimes they're humorous. We'll see what that goes on with ours today. And the second half of the program, we've got a gentleman, his name is Andrew Biggio, and he wrote a book entitled The Rifle. And just a brief description of it is that Andrew went around the country talking to World War II veterans, average age 93, 94 years old, to talk about what the M1 Garand rifle meant to them during World War II. It's a great story, a very compelling story, and I invite you to stick around to find out more about it, because it's really heart-wrenching to know what Andrew was able to accomplish in talking to these really older gentlemen over the last couple of years. But before we get into our program, first thing we have to do all the time is we need to thank our sponsors, because we can't do this program without them and without you and our listening audience. Number one, of course, is Legal Help for Veterans. Legal Help for Veterans has been a sponsor of Veterans Radio, I think, since about the beginning, 2004, 2005. They specialize in veterans' disability claims, so give them a call at Legal Help for Veterans at 800-693-4800, 800-693-4800, or go to their website, that's legalhelpforveterans.com. The National Veterans Business Development Council, better known as NVBDC, is the nation's leading third-party authority for certification of veteran-owned businesses. For more information, go to their website, that's nvbdc.org, or give them a call at 888-237-8433. You want to do business with the federal government and you are part of a veteran-owned, service-connected disabled veteran-owned business. I know that's a mouthful, but that's what it is. You need to be certified. And this is what the organization does. This is what NVB does. Is they certify your business as an official, legitimate, veteran-owned business. So, again, give them a call at 888-237-8433. The Charles S. Kettles VA Medical Center here in Ann Arbor, Michigan. For more information about them, you can go to va.gov/Ann Arbor Healthcare. The Residential Home Health and Hospice Care for Veterans and Their Families. You know, as we age, we need these services more and more. And this organization, Residential Healthcare Group, is able to help us answer some of those questions that we have as we age a little bit more and more and more and more and need more and more assistance and help. So give them a call at 866-902-5854 or go to their website. That's residentialhealthcaregroup.com. Also, we make sure we thank our local veterans organizations, the Irwin Press Corps and American Legion Post 46, and the Charles S. Kettles Vietnam Veterans of America Chapter 310, both of Ann Arbor, Michigan. We also want to thank you, our listeners, for your support over the last 20 years. And if you'd like to help keep Veterans Radio going, just go to our website, veteransradio.org, and click on the donate button. We've been doing this for 20 years, so we're asking for $20 donations. Feel free to give more if you can. We'd greatly appreciate anything that you can help us with. All right, so let's get right into our first guest for the evening. And this is, as I mentioned before, it's Operation Song. And as I said, Operation Song writes music, helping veterans, you know, talk about their issues, get their issues down in song and so forth. Their motto is bringing them back one song at a time. And joining me on the line right now is the veteran in this case. That is Roger Blackwood. Roger, welcome to Veterans Radio.
All right. Thank you, Dale.
Thank you, Roger. Tell us a little bit about your background in the military. I think I found you on Google, but I want to make sure it's the right one.
Well, Dale, yeah, it probably is. I've never been one to put a lot up there, but some positions I did serve in, of course, there's things out there in Google. I joined the Army in 1978. Well, I actually joined in March 78, delayed entry program, and then went active duty in September 1978. Out there in the Midwest, in Nebraska, on the farm. A couple of recruiters came in there, a little small school, and I said, yeah, I'll talk to them. And as you know, the Army just started the volunteer force just a couple of years prior. Anyway, not many choices out there in the Midwest, farm or go to a tech school. Anyway, I joined in 78, armor crewman, and I ended up doing a 35-year active duty career and had a very good career of many places around the world and in many positions where I was able to enjoy my time in the service and actually impact and influence many others. And in short, and I was an armor crewman, a tanker, and out of that 35 years, I did spend 13 years in 82nd Airborne Division with the armor unit and deployed numerous times to Iraq, the first one, actually in Desert Storm, Bosnia-Herzegovina, the old border camp in Europe, with tours in Korea, and many of them in the 18th Airborne Corps. In short, I had a great career, and I'm still standing and served with many good soldiers and a lot of great people.
Well, that's the important thing, that you're still standing. Well, it was you, I guess, that I found, because I saw that you were a command sergeant major at Fort Polk, Louisiana, and that was one of my favorite places I ever went to when I was in the service.
Yes, actually, I was the regimental command sergeant major for 2nd ACR, and that's where I deployed initially in OIF-1 during the initial invasion, if we call it that, and did. I was the first 15-month tour. And that's actually where I got to serve with Sergeant Major retired Sam Rhodes, who runs Warrior Outreach and Operation Song. And that's how years later, Sam invited me a few years ago to Operation Song. And that's where I got to be a part of that. And as you know, as a Command Sergeant Major at different levels, you don't open up to a lot of people. You keep a lot inside. And okay. Sam, I think, knew that because we served us together during OIF-1. And he pulled me in to that, and I thank him for that to this day.
Well, you obviously had a great military career, and we want to, thank you for your service, as they say, and, all the dedication, obviously, that you put into that 35 years. I can't imagine, I was so anxious to get out after 3.5, different time period. So you ended up with Operation Song, and I was reading the song that we're going to be talking about is Was It Worth It? And we've got the songwriter on with us right now as well. And his name is Will Nance, and Will is a songwriter, performer, well-known songwriter. I'm looking up, your history, Will, and see that you had a number one song with Brad Paisley called She's Everything. A lot of Grammy-winning awards and albums and all sorts of things. So, Will, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Well, thank you, Dale. And Roger, how you doing, buddy? Good to hear your voice.
Fine, Will. I take you off and stuff.
This is what I love about doing this program. We get, we reconnect some people that had some, some things going on for a little while. And so, Will, how did you get involved with Operation Song? Did I lose him? Maybe. We'll come back to that. So let me get back to Roger here. So Roger, when you went down to, you met up with Will, it was at Warrior Outreach Ranch. Was that where you went?
So I got there. I'm not sure. I didn't know really what it was all about. And then Sam, I got down. Of course, I knew Sam, and that was very comforting. And there's also a couple of soldiers there, veterans, who had served with me in the regiment, an OIF-1. So immediately I felt comfortable. And then I found out what it's all about, and I got linked up with Will Nance. And I will tell you, Dale, and Will is just a great person. I'm not the kind of person to open up much, but when we started to write that song, Will's ability to talk with people, it just gives you such a comfort zone that you kind of really opened up. And that's where I opened up to Will, and he kind of pieced it all together from some of my comments that he asked about my career, and they came up with that song, Was It Worth It?
Well, we've got Will
back on. Which I do have a story about, you know, what that meant, where it came from, was it worth it?
Let me hold on to that thought and come right back to that. Will, are we back on the line, correct?
Okay, can you hear me?
Yeah, now we got you. All right, so how did you get involved with Operation Song?
Well, you know, my buddy Bob Regan founded this organization. Gosh, I lose track of time, how fast it goes by. Probably at least 10, 11, 12, 13 years ago. And he asked me if I would want to be a part of this, you know, writing with some veterans and stuff. I said, sure, man, I would love to do that. And that's how I got started, you know, and I've been fortunate enough to be a part of this. And it's really a blessing to me as a writer to be able to do this, you know, and it helps a lot of people out. You know, I've written with at least 4 or 5 World War II guys. And, you know, it's a blessing, but that's how I got started. Bob Regan's he's a award-winning songwriter, and that's how I got started doing this.
All right, so Roger, you sat down with Will at this at the Outreach Ranch and came up with your song. Was It Worth It? You were just going to tell us a little bit about how did you come up with the title.
Well, Dale, I was a Northern Iraq Command Sergeant Major as the Division Sergeant Major in 2007, 2008. And we had a lot of different operating bases out there in Northern Iraq. And one day I was visiting one. And of course, the little small forward operating bases, dusty as can be, hot, dusty. And some soldiers that just came off patrol and they were in a striker unit. So there was myself and about 5 soldiers sitting behind some T-walls, which are those cement protective barriers. Eating MREs, their rifles, and I will note their rifles, and I do have a picture of my rifleman who was with me, took that unstaged photo without me knowing it, myself and those soldiers, a clean rifle, all dirty, and sitting across from me was Corporal Luke Runyon. And, you know, as a sergeant major, sometimes we get to talking and stuff with soldiers, and he looked at me, and I got that photo where he's staring right at me, and he goes, Sergeant Major, how long have you been in? And I told him at that time I'd been in 30 years. I'd been in the Army 30 years. And then he goes, well, I'm thinking about re-enlisting. I don't know. I've got a 2-year-old daughter at home. Whether or not to re-enlist. And he looked at me and goes, was it worth it? And I told him, well, I can't answer that question for each or every individual. That's something you have to answer yourself. For me, I told him, yes, my service, it was worth it, being in the United States Army. And we talked some more a little bit. And then, of course, you know, I move out. And that was October 2007. I get back to that FOB around November. I'm walking through the little small FOB there, and up comes running Corporal Luke Runyon. He had just reenlisted. He'd seen me and ran up to me. And he was so proud and said, I reenlisted, Sergeant Major. I'm going to stay. And I said, of course, you know, great, great. Congratulations. Fast forward to February 2008, the casualty report came in. Corporal Luke Runyon with his fellow soldier, Specialist Groper, were killed in action. They were in a trench. They jumped into trench, and the insurgents, whatever we want to call it, put the name tag on those we were fighting, and he got hit. He got hit in the leg area, and he bled out, which means he was killed in action in February 2008. And that hit pretty hard, and them words always, at least to this day, they stick with me when he asked, was it worth it? And his daughter is probably about 18, 19, 20 years old now, probably somewhere. And General Hertling, my division commander, he got a copy of that picture, and he framed it with the words on there, "Was it worth it?" And that's where that song came up as I was talking to Will. Was it worth it? And that came from Corporal Luke Runyon, who was killed in action in February 2008.
So, Will, when Roger told you this story, I'm guessing it just naturally flowed out of you, I'll bet you.
Well, yeah, I mean, Roger, he told me the story, and we just put what he said to some music, you know. It's all coming back to me now. I write with so many soldiers and stuff, and I remember writing with Roger. I remember Roger, but him telling that story there, and I'm looking at the lyric of this song, it's like, wow. It's all coming back to me, you know, like it was yesterday, you know, it's like, but yeah, that's quite the story, man. Very touching. Yeah. When he said that, I go, well, there's your song. And we just, it's his song. I just helped him with it.
Yeah. Cause so many of us have a talent to write songs and, you know, music and lyrics and everything along the line that goes with it. Well, why don't we play the song right now for our listeners and for you? And when we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about the meaning of the song. And maybe you guys could help me out by sending me the lyrics. And Roger, I would love to get a copy of that picture to put up on our website promoting today's program.
I can do that, Dale.
Okay. All right. So here we go. Was it worth it?
Country boy at 18, never been on a plane. Left the fields of the Midwest plains. Joined the airborne, jumped out of planes. 800-foot journey at the door down to the ground. As a soldier, traveled around the world. From the heat of the desert to the cold of Korea, yeah. Was it worth it? You gotta want it to know. Was it worth it? You gotta want it to know. When it was time for me to leave, I gotta say, I didn't want to go. I think of Luke Runyon every time I turn around. That picture of us in the dust, cleaner rifles on the ground. He was asking for an answer, so I gave him one. Now there's a stone with his name on it on a grave. All I've done. He asked me, "Was it worth it? You gotta want it to know. Was it worth it? You gotta want it to know. When it was time for me to leave, I gotta say I didn't want to go." Near beer and some Twinkies, and the desert was a little taste of home. And a minute with your family was a blessing on that satellite phone. Was it worth it? You gotta walk it to know. Was it worth it? You gotta walk it to know. When it was time for me to leave, I gotta say I didn't want to go. Yeah, when it was time for me to leave, I gotta say I didn't want to go home.
I don't know. Was it worth it from Roger Blackwood and Will Nance? It's part of the Operation Song program. For those of you that have been listening to us over the last couple of years, they match up soldiers with songwriters, and this was one of the results. Just a great song. Will, you know, your talent obviously came through, and Roger, I think you got it. I think you got your story right.
Yes, Dale, brings back a lot of memories just hearing it again.
Well, I am sure that it does, and especially when we know the backstory about young, Luke Runyon, asking you if it was it worth it. I'm sure that brings back a lot of memories for you.
Yes, it does. And with the Twinkies and near beer and just some of those words in the story with that. Yes, it does.
Yeah, it does. Will, you mentioned that, you feel that this is a privilege to sit down with these veterans and write these songs. I can't imagine how it really feels. I mean, to be able to take these men and women's stories and, put them to song I think I would take it as really such a privilege.
Oh, it's a privilege. It's amazing, and it helps these people. You know, it helps these veterans and stuff. You know, I've seen it change lives. To be honest with you, something about the music. They've told us some things that they haven't told anybody else. You know, and that is definitely a privilege. That is a blessing to be able to sit down with these men and women and be a part of this. I mean, I can't put it into words, to be honest with you.
This from a songwriter. there's a song there somewhere, right? I want to thank both of you, Roger Blackwood and Will Nance from the Operation Song for this particular one. Was it worth it? I encourage you all out there, all of our listeners out there, to go to operationsong.org and find out more. There's a lot of sample songs on there.
Yes.
Maybe they can, put on an event in your area to, connect some veterans with their songwriters. I know it's something that I'm trying to figure out how I can get them to come up to Michigan so we can do it up here. But did I hear somebody say, oh, we'd be happy to do that?
Make that happen, I bet you.
All right. I'll make sure I talk with the powers that be at Operation Song. So Will Nance, Roger Woodward, Blackwood, thank you very much for being on Veterans Radio.
Well, thank you. And Roger, good hearing your voice, my friend.
Oh, maybe we must have lost Roger. So anyway, thank you very much, Will. We'll be in touch. Hopefully we can get you back on and talk about another song that you've written for Operation Song. All right, so we are going to take a break right now and play our segment, our Medal of Honor segment. When we come back, we're going to have Andrew Biggio on, and he's going to be talking about his book entitled The Rifle. You're listening to Veterans Radio.
The Medal of Honor is the highest award for valor in combat given a member of the Armed Forces of the United States. There have been over 3,400 recipients of the nation's highest award. This is one of them.
Staff Sergeant Homer Wise's platoon was pinned down four times. Each time, Wise led a breakout of the platoon. Details after this.
If you have a VA claim denied by the Board of Veterans Appeals, contact Legal Help for Veterans at 1-800-693-4800. They're experts in handling cases before the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims. Their number again, 1-800-693-4800. While his platoon was pinned down by enemy small arms fire from both flanks, he left his position of comparative safety and assisted in carrying one of his men, who had been seriously wounded and who lay in an exposed position, to a point where he could receive medical attention. The advance of the platoon was resumed, but it was again stopped by enemy frontal fire. A German officer and two enlisted men, armed with automatic weapons, threatened the right flank. Fearlessly exposing himself, Wise moved to a position from which he killed all three with his submachine gun. Returning to his squad, he obtained an M1 rifle and several anti-tank grenades, then took up a position from which he delivered accurate fire on the enemy, holding up the advance. As the battalion moved forward, it was again stopped by enemy frontal and flanking fire. Wise procured an automatic rifle and, advancing ahead of his men, neutralized an enemy machine gun with his fire. When the flanking fire became more intense, he ran to a nearby tank and, exposing himself on the turret, restored a jammed machine gun to operating efficiency and used it so effectively that the enemy fire from an adjacent ridge was materially reduced, thus permitting the battalion to occupy its objective.
The Medal of Honor series is a production of Veterans Radio.
Military veterans touch everyone's life. I'm guessing right now you're thinking of a veteran, a close friend, relative. Maybe it's you. Even the toughest of us sometimes need help, but don't know where to turn for support. You don't need special training to help a veteran in your life. We can all help someone going through a difficult time. Learn how you can be there for veterans. Visit VeteransCrisisLine.net. VeteransCrisisLine.net. A message from the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs.
We're back here on Veterans Radio. This is Dale Thronberry, your host for today's program. And joining me on the line right now is Andrew Biggio. And Andrew's book is entitled The Rifle. And it's a story about World War II veterans that Andrew chased across the country to have them sign this M1 Garand rifle. And I'll let him talk a little bit more about that in just a second. But let me tell you just a little bit about Andrew. He was enlisted in the United States Marine Corps in 2006. He served as an infantry rifleman during Operation Iraqi Freedom and Operation Enduring Freedom in Afghanistan. He did 6 years in the Marine Corps as a sergeant and also earned his degree from Suffolk University when he got out. Seems like he's a glutton for punishment. But after college, he wanted to continue to serve, so he was sworn in as a police officer in 2015, where he has worked there ever since. Excuse me. One of the things that he founded, which is this is a veteran, I think. He's the founder of Boston's Wounded Veteran Run, New England's largest motorcycle ride dedicated to severely wounded veterans. For the last 10 years, Andrew has saw the need to assist soldiers, Marines, airmen, and soldiers who returned from Iraq and Afghanistan with injuries. Nonprofit has been responsible for housing modifications, new transportation, financial support, basic living needs, and some of America's most severely combat veterans. And he's a policeman and a new father. Everything is happening here. So, Andrew, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Thank you for having me. That's a great introduction. I appreciate it.
Well, you've accomplished more in the last 10 years than most people do in a whole lifetime. So let's start talking about the rifle. How did you come about around with this idea?
Yeah, well, you know, it spawned from, unfortunately, my great uncle being killed in World War II. And I'm named after him. So when I came home from Afghanistan, I started to read all the letters he wrote home, this young private, this young man who never got to live his life, really. And I read all of his letters that he wrote home before he died. And in one of the letters, how much he enjoyed the M1 Garand. So I went out and bought one. I wanted to feel what he felt. I wanted to hold what he held. And I began to take the rifle to other World War II veterans and putting it into their hands and seeing their reaction to see how much it meant to them.
I can only imagine what, in reading the book, and it was a real, actually, it was a real joy to read your book. I love all the stories, and we'll kind of try to talk about some of the people that you interviewed. And but this rifle, the M1, I didn't realize it was called a Garand?
M1 Garand, yep.
Garand, okay. I just knew the word M1. My dad was in the Coast Guard, so he didn't have a lot of exposure to these things. So this was the weapon or the rifle of World War II, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was the standard rifle of that era, of that time. Almost everyone had experience with it, whether they shot it in basic training or carried it in combat. No matter if you were a cook, a Medal of Honor recipient, infantry, anything, it was something that these veterans were able to connect with. It represents the whole war, this rifle.
And so when you decided that you were going to go out and have some of these World War II veterans sign this rifle, who was the first person that you talked to?
I'm sorry, could you repeat that? It cut out.
Yeah, sure. Who was the first veteran that you talked to that you got to sign the rifle?
Oh, Joe Drago was the first. I thought you said first. Joe was my next door neighbor. He had held the rifle basically for the first time. It had no signatures on it whatsoever. As soon as I put this rifle into his hands, he shot up and we started talking about the Battle of Okinawa for almost 4 hours. And, you know, because I was trying to figure out, you know, here I was reading Andrew Biggio's letters that he wrote home before he was killed, but the letters end, you know, a few days before he dies. And then I figured, like, who else can I take this rifle to? Who else can I talk to that went through something similar that my uncle did? And Joe had been living next door to me and was 92 at the time. He had really weakened, had gotten skinny, and he was bound to his recliner. And then when I went over his house and put this rifle into his hands again, it was like it gave him a strength of being 18 years old again. He started waving it around, smiling from ear to ear. And I said, Joe, please sign your name on this rifle. I always want to remember this moment. And he did. He signed his name. We talked about the Battle of Okinawa. And then now today, you know, 7 years later, there's over 320 names covered all over this rifle. You can't even see the wood of it.
I can't imagine. You know, the book is called The Rifle. It's by Andrew Biggio, B-I-G-G-I-O. So look it up, folks. I'm encouraging you to read it. Make a great Christmas present to, you know, your history buffs that are out there. So you've been traveling all over the country doing this for the last, 7 years, you said?
Oh, yeah, coast to coast, different countries. You know, I wanted to represent the whole war on the rifle. I wanted to get men's signatures on the rifle who are, you know, B-17 pilots, Tuskegee Airmen, Iwo Jima vets, Battle of the Bulge veterans, ex-prisoners of war, nurses, doctors, everything. Every I wanted to represent every battle, every campaign, and I did as best as I could.
Well, I just love the cross-section. I mean, obviously you couldn't include all the people in your book, but there are Marines in here. There are Army guys, as you mentioned. There are POWs. There's ambulance drivers and everything across the board. And, you know, I was trying to think of some of the stories that I thought were really, I don't know, I guess touched my heart more than anything else. And, one was toward the end of the book, and that was the one Aubrey, I think his name was, hold on, I gotta look it up right here. I wrote it down and then I lost my piece of paper. All my notes.
They all taught me something. You know, meeting over 300 of these vets, you know, I had to pick 19 of the best stories for my first book, The Rifle. And after it became a number one bestseller, people demanded more. They wanted more. They wanted to hear more, see more. So I wrote a second book with 19 more stories. You know, these stories are some that have never been told, some of them that have been told, but a different spin on it. You know, I interject a lot of myself going to these veterans' homes and bonding from one veteran to another. And me being an Iraq and Afghanistan veteran, it's a story of the youngest generation of America's veterans saying goodbye to the oldest and how to live a successful life after combat.
Well, I think the thing I got out of it was, you know, obviously 75 years ago, you know, the world was a different place. And, you know, you talked with Japanese American soldiers. The article I read this morning was Robert Andre, and he was Patton's last Panther, and he was a black soldier, and talking, you know, he came from Alabama, and you know, just the world that he suddenly was, you know, thrown into was so different than small town Alabama for a black soldier. And how he was.
Yeah, he's one of my heroes. I got to see him actually on Veterans Day, this last Veterans Day that went by. I mean, just amazing. I've been trying to actually even get him to France to show him exactly where his tank was destroyed. And he's one of those guys that won't go back and relive that. But his stories, I mean, he was one of the first black tankers to ever see combat in United States military history. And that's huge. And his story, oh my God, I mean, between white infantry guys protecting the tanks and the black tankers protecting the white infantrymen, I mean, it was a story on how to end racism quickly because these men fought for each other and died for each other.
Yeah, absolutely. And he was, you know, and actually when he was going through his training, he was going through his training at Fort Knox's young lieutenant was Jackie Robinson, the baseball player.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Jackie Robinson was a famous gentleman in that unit. He did not deploy to combat with those men. He stayed home and trained the other tankers. But Robert remembers him well, actually.
Well, the stories are great and how you were able to pull these out of him, because it was the first time that Robert Andrew told his story, I think, aloud, was when you were talking with him, because you mentioned how his family was around him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he kept quiet about his conditions, you know. Basically, they didn't know anything about him, and he kept it to himself until I showed up with a rifle in their home.
I can't imagine. Did you have any trouble not getting in to see some people that you wanted to see?
No, most veterans were receptive. If they didn't understand what we were doing, then I would send them letters and mail and show them photos of the rifle. And they said, oh, my God, what a project. I'd love to be a part of it. Come on down.
I think the idea of these people in their 90s, and as you mentioned, one of the things I've always been amazed at World War II veterans is every time I've participated in a parade or gone to, you know, Fourth of July parade or something along those lines, and you go past you see the really older veterans, and as soon as you go by with a flag raising, you know, being carried in front of them, they all stand up. Even if they're in a walker, suddenly they get straight and they salute it, you know, they snap a salute up, and you can tell how proud they are of what they have been able to accomplish. I just think it's wonderful. You know, obviously what you've done to encourage these people to tell their stories.
Thank you very much.
So, you know, as I mentioned, you know, you talked with Robert Andrew, I thought he was kind of cool. Steve, and I'm throwing these names out. I know you have 300 of them that you talked to, so I'll try and give you a lead into it. Tell me about, if you can, Bob White. He was part of the 17th Airborne, in the Battle of the Bulge.
Yeah, Robert White, he just passed away last week, actually, at age 100. He was a magnificent fellow. He was in the 507th Parachute Infantry Regiment, had never returned to his drop zone in Germany, had never returned to the Battle of the Bulge sector where he fought. And I got to return with him and see about this, you know, this little known airborne infantry unit. You know, the 17th Airborne was disbanded after World War II. A lot of people don't realize that they also jumped over the Rhine River and into Germany during Operation Varsity. A lot of the major airborne jumps of the 101st Airborne, the 82nd Airborne are often focused strictly on Normandy and Holland. And the forgotten jump, they call it, was Operation Varsity. And to bring Bob back to his drop zone was amazing. And we actually erected a monument together for the 17th Airborne in Germany, which one never existed.
You've been really involved in a lot of these monuments. I think that's really cool.
Yeah.
The thing I liked about the story about Bob White was, and I don't know, I guess it was tongue in cheek a little bit. He said, he wasn't really jealous of the 101st, but he says they got all the glory. Nobody ever heard about the 17th.
That's the truth. Yeah. He said that. And then when we got to the drop zone, of course, there was not even like a monument or memorial to these men who took 2,000 casualties during this operation.
I think that those things are the most amazing to me is the number of casualties that these men suffered not being around, of course, during the 1940s myself either, to take a town, they would lose 200 to 500 or sometimes even more than that, not only KIAs, but wounded. To me, it's just mind blowing. I can't imagine the trauma that these men and women, went through just trying to, get up through Italy or get, across, the Netherlands or Holland or Belgium or all those things that we heard about in our history classes, but not really heard about. You know what I mean?
Yeah, sure. It took me to get out there and meet all of them to learn about all the different units.
There was, Steve Domitrovich, I think his name is. He was an ambulance driver, and he got caught up in a POW situation where the Germans, executed all this whole group of army military people.
Oh yeah, the Malmedy massacre. Yep, he was a survivor of it.
How did he talk about his story? What did he tell you?
Oh, well, he that was one of the biggest war crimes against U.S. soldiers during World War II. Germans had nearly killed 100 men who had surrendered in a field. And he laid there and played dead as Germans were walking around and shooting other wounded and dying soldiers. He played dead. And after several hours, he got up and ran to the woods. And they put him right back into circulation, right back into being a soldier on the front lines again after he experienced that traumatic incident where they just were slaughtered in the field by machine guns. And this guy went his whole life without feeling sorry for himself or anything like that. He kept going, and he was a huge inspiration.
And just the idea of all these men that were, they would get wounded, and then the next thing you know, they're back on the fronts. It's because it wasn't bad enough to be sent home. What does that do to your mind?
Right.
Really? Think about it.
Yeah, they were able to prevail through a lot in their lives, and that's why a lot of their stories, I want younger veterans to see this and know that they too can make it to the finish line and grow to old, have a family, a career, go to college, have work after going what they went through.
Well, I think that's really important. It's for the younger veterans to realize that, these older ones that are out there went through, very similar situations, came out the other side, and most of them were able to make a life for themselves. And, I think that's one of that transitioning from, the being in combat and being shot at or maybe even being wounded and so forth, and then coming back and just trying to, ease your way back into civilian life is so difficult for so many people.
Yeah, it is. And some people can overcome it, others can't. But I think taking a page out of these guys' chapter, these guys' lives, is a good way to learn.
I think it's a great history lesson. I was interested in talking a little bit about Al Bucciarelli. He's another one of your people from Massachusetts.
And Al lost his leg in Italy when he was 19 years old, got it blown off, and I took him back to show him where he lost his leg. 75 years later, I brought him back to Italy. He had never returned, and brought him back to the vicinity, lost his leg, and showed him the grave of his squad leader that was killed by the same explosion that took his leg. And, man, he was also another inspiration. And on that trip, I paired him up with another Marine, actually, who lost his leg in Iraq. So the two of them together was just really something amazing. Two amputees from two different wars, 75 years apart.
That's what I was really excited to talk to you about, was this particular veteran and, the Iraq veteran as well, because you have a photo in the book, The Rifles. We're talking with Andrew Biggio, and the book is entitled The Rifle. I guess this is volume one of a series. It looks like it's probably going to be, but you have a really nice picture of them, two of them sitting there, and you can see both of their prosthetic legs there. And I'm sure that they must have bonded just over that.
Oh yeah, totally. And, it was so new, unique. I mean, that photo will probably be famous one day.
Many of your photos, I think, will be famous someday. It's just, as you go through each chapter in here, Andrew has a picture of the veteran holding up the rifle, and you can see how just, it just brings them, most of them, it brings back, an extra shot of adrenaline, I guess would be the word I'm using for it, because these folks are not young at all.
No, they're not. I mean, now the youngest World War II veteran really you could be is about 97 right now.
Right.
And that's 18 during the war.
I don't know. The thing I found really cool was the way that some of these veterans would refer you to other veterans.
Oh yeah, so many of them still remain friends with each other, or having coffee, or going to their local VFW together. And I'd visit one guy with the rifle, and he'd say, "You got to go see my friend George, or my buddy from my reunions, or my cousin who also jumped into Normandy." This was so many cool stories like that met, because these guys stayed in touch with each other, and it's getting harder and harder for these men to find one another.
Well, it's unfortunately, because they're disappearing, I'm sure, rather rapidly. I was looking at the story of the Japanese American. Well, I got to find his name here now again. You probably recall it, but he was talking about that his family did not get put into the, I don't know what you want to call them, internment camps. That's what it was. But that, here he is. Lawson Sakai was the 442nd Regimental Combat Team. And when you interviewed him, he was 95. And he was talking about that. He said he wasn't angry. He still doesn't hold a grudge. He was at a reunion of Japanese American soldiers, and their children were coming in. Grandchildren were coming to find the stories about their relatives and so forth. And, this whole unit, just like the black tankers were, going up through Italy and, going across France and so forth, having to prove that they were true American soldiers.
It's the truth. They ended up being the most decorated infantry regiment of all time, these Japanese Americans. And it's true to this day, the 442nd Regimental Combat Team. And Lawson himself had 3 Purple Hearts, 2 Bronze Stars. I mean, he was just, what a guy. I had to write about him. I knew when I first met him, because his story was one of the toughest and most powerful ones, of overcoming severe racism and having to be put through cannon fodder, through Italy, fighting up the gauntlet, up those mountains, and being one of the most heavily decorated men in his regiment.
I don't think many of us are aware of, these battles, in Italy, because, these were occurring at the same time that D-Day occurred. And of course, that was the one that got the big stories at the time. And many of these men in this story is talking about some of the generals and, general officers that they were under that, had really strong egos. Let's put it that way. They wanted to be the first in Rome, or they wanted to be the first in Paris, or they wanted to be the first in Germany. And they just kind of kept pushing these men, continually pushing, no breaks in the battlefield. I mean, some of these guys were in the field for weeks at a time, months at a time, without a break. And I don't know how they did that. I wish I had read this book you know, 50 years ago. So I could have figured out, you know, why certain friends of my family or my dad, you know, and so forth acted the way that they did. Or even we were talking the other day with some friends about our teachers. When I went to high school back in the 60s, the vast majority of them probably were World War II veterans, and we didn't even know it.
Oh, yeah. Even when I grew up in the 80s and the 90s, you know, thinking about these old men and saying, you know, thinking, not really knowing who they are besides being a little kid, thinking, like, look at that old grouch or that old guy, or, you know, and, man, no. I wish I could go back in time and talk to more of them.
Well, I do, too. So you mentioned that you have other volumes of this book coming out, or are they out already?
Yeah, the Rifle Volume 2 came out about 2 months ago, actually. And it's been doing good. It became a bestseller as well. And a little bit more controversial and a little bit more stories of guys who had rougher times coming home and adapting to civilian life. Some of them ended up in jail. Some of them became alcoholics. Some of them were liars about their service. And I was able to include those men's story, too, that sometimes the greatest generation isn't perfect.
Yeah, there's a few embellishments out there. We did a story about a Medal of Honor recipient a couple of months ago that evidently had embellished his events. We won't go into that. But, it, you know, it happens. In the fog of war, sometimes you don't remember what really happened.
Right.
So we've been talking with Andrew Biggio. The book that we're talking about right now is entitled The Rifle, and it can be found pretty much everywhere. I know it's on Amazon and major bookstores and so forth out there. And now that we have a new second one, Rifle 2, Andrew, I'd love to have you back on the program after I get an opportunity to read that one.
Thank you so much. I'd love to.
I really do appreciate what you are, you know, what you've done as a young veteran, not only the books that you're writing, but also your nonprofit. Could you just talk about that real briefly and give a little plug? So maybe there are people out there that would like to help you out financially with that one.
Absolutely. You know, for the last 13 years, I've been helping my fellow Iraq and Afghanistan veterans who came home with serious wounds. And I do a motorcycle charity ride every year in Massachusetts. It's one of the largest, about 3,000-4,000 motorcycles. And it's theyfoughtweride.com. And you can see on there how to donate or support the cause or start a local charity ride in your state. theyfoughtweride.com. And my book is The Rifle, and it can be found at Amazon or on Facebook, Instagram, The Rifle. And I appreciate being on the show.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And be careful with your real-world job, please.
Thank you. God bless.
All right. God bless you. Andrew Biggio, author of The Rifle. He's also a full-time policeman. Goes all over the country, finds these World War II veterans that, you know, have an opportunity to open up and tell their stories that we, you know, this is what we do here at Veterans Radio as well. If we don't tell their stories, then they disappear and we never know about what Uncle Joe or Jim or Bob did, you know, when they were younger. Not everybody, you know, not everybody at 90 years old is an old guy. You know, they're still 18 years old in their brains. That's what they want to be, and that's where they were when they were at their finest. So I encourage you, to read this, talk to veterans, participate in the Veterans History Project. If you're a veteran listening to me now, and you've never told anybody your stories, make sure that you go to the Veterans History Project and record your stories. Wouldn't it be great to have your grandchildren go in and say, hey, Uncle Joe, he did what? Holy moly. See, you never know what happened with these. So do that. Men and women are in the military now, increasing numbers, and their stories are out there just as well. So anyway, tune in next week for Veterans Radio. Jim Falcione will be here. He'll have some more great stories for you. We'll be back in 2 weeks to talk with Keith King of the National Veterans Business, NVBDC, National Veterans Business Development Council, to talk with you about businesses and how you can become a good veteran business owner. So this is Dale Thronberry for all of us here at Veterans Radio. Until next week, you are dismissed.